That's exactly what it is. Like, you have to be self-propelled. You have to keep pushing through those hard parts where you feel like you don't know what to do next. And I think that's the story that aspiring entrepreneurs really need to hear, and to know that while you may have an awesome support system around you, you have to be your biggest cheerleader, and you have to be dedicated to pushing through every day. And that's, you know, we talk about doing what you love, and like, that's awesome. I totally agree with that, but also know that doing what you love can be really hard.
This is the Cracking Creativity Podcast, episode number 47 with Angela Lucier. Welcome to the Cracking Creativity Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Chung, and I'm here to show you how creatives turn their ideas into action, create interesting projects, and build an engaged audience through shared passions. Now let's get creative. In this episode of the Cracking Creativity Podcast, I talk to Angela Lucier, who is a coach, public speaker, and the author of three books. She came courtesy of an introduction through Dory Clark. In this episode, Angela talks about her journey towards creating her own business, how to overcome the imposter syndrome, why you need to live life by your own rules, and the importance of play, among many other things. Now on to the episode. Welcome to another episode of Cracking Creativity. Today I'm on Angela Lucier, and she is an author of Anti-Resume Resolution and the upcoming book, Who's With Us? She's also a speaker and business coach, and she's been featured in multiple publications, including About.com, ABC, The Letters, and she had a TEDx talk. She was also featured in Stand Out by Dory Clark, which is how I found out about her. Angela, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and kind of what you're doing?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. So I am probably the most unlikely business owner you'll meet, because I was such a shy person when I was younger. And there was this part of me on the inside that like felt really weird and felt like I didn't fit in. But there was another part of me that felt like a leader who wanted to get out. So it was really confusing in my teenage years and my early 20s. And it wasn't until I got into the working world after college and started to interact with teams and be part of different companies that I realized I had a real creative spirit and had a different way of looking at business than most people. And it was in 2009 when I had a disagreement with my boss, and he told me that he knew my creativity would be an issue when he hired me. And that was when I decided that I wanted to run my own business and help all of the other people who felt stifled at work, felt like their soul was being crushed by rules, and really just wanted to express themselves and do work that really mattered to them and the people they wanted to help. And that was when I started career coaching and started speaking, and you know, realized that if I wanted to be a leader, I had to be a little less shy and be willing to talk and get up in front of people, put my fear aside, and just kind of fought through it every time, got on stage, presented on topics like how to be yourself, how to present yourself, how to do work you care about, how to get started. And then in 2009, wrote the Anti-Resume Revolution, which is about adopting an entrepreneurial mindset and really knowing yourself and putting that your true energy and creativity into your work. And then this year, I published just last week the book Who's With Us? From Wondering to Knowing If You Should Start a Business in 21 Days. And that came from 6 years of meetings with people who came to me saying, I'm racking my brain. I don't know what to do. I think I want to start a business, but I don't know if I'm the right kind of person for that. And I don't know if I'm a leader, and I don't want to fail, and I don't want to disappoint my family. And all these questions that come up when you think about doing something scary. And the book addresses all of the different pieces that you should be thinking about before you go into starting a business, just about yourself, not so much about the idea. So it's full of like self-assessments. And last year I launched an online community and school for new business owners called the Do and Make Business District, which helps small business owners who are new to get training and learn new skills to build their business in a more cost-effective way than hiring a coach, and to do it alongside their peers who are also trying to, you know, get out there in the world, make their mark, do their important work, and help people. So I have a lot of different things going on, but all with the same sort of mission in mind, which is to help people express their creativity through their work and to feel comfortable and confident to do that in a way that feels right to them.
Awesome. That all sounds very cool.
Yeah.
What was the first or the job that you had when you were quitting because your boss told you you were too creative?
I was an executive recruiter. And when they hired me, they said, it's like running your own business within a business. And I was like, oh, that sounds cool. I've always wanted to explore what that would be like. And it was like the absolute opposite, because I was so micromanaged. I had to make a certain number of phone calls every day, and they monitored them, and they like made sure I was at my desk at 7:30 every morning. And it was in that 6-month review when I brought up this idea to market myself differently and got all excited about taking pictures and sending out postcards to potential customers, and they kind of freaked out. So that was the big turning point when I was like, I don't need this.
Is that the job from the story Stand Out where you had $2,000 in the bank?
Yes, exactly.
Can you explain that story for the people who haven't heard it?
Sure. Yeah, when I decided that I needed to leave that job, I really did not have a financial backing at all. I had $2,000 in my bank account. I was living alone, renting an apartment, and I knew that $2,000 would take me about 2.5 or 3 months. And starting a business without really any money, I realized I had to go out and speak because I had lots of time. I could get in front of people. I just couldn't pay to do that. So at first, on day one, I reached out to a ton of colleges. I live in an area with like 20, 25 colleges. And if they answered the phone or called me back, they all said no. And they said, you know, we have career centers on campus. We don't need to talk to a career coach. We're all set. And I thought, well, maybe I could call libraries. I don't know. Maybe they would be interested. So I got on the phone with libraries, and a bunch of them said, well, we don't really do that because we don't want infomercials in our library, and we don't want people selling. And as much as I tried to convince them that that's not what I was doing and I wanted to just inform people and help them get a job, they weren't really up for it. And then finally, one library, I live in Western Mass. It was in Northampton, Mass. The woman who answered the phone said, well, yeah, that sounds interesting. How many workshops would you want to do? And I was totally stunned by that question because I was just expecting to do one and then call other libraries and do others. But when she asked the question, how many, something kicked in inside of me that was, I guess, opportunistic. And I said, 8? And she was like, great. Yeah, let's do 8. Can you do like 8 during the day for people who are unemployed and then 8 at night for people who have a job? And I was like, yeah. So I got the phone. I was like, oh my God, I just booked 16 workshops in the next 8 weeks. And I thought, all right, I can leverage that. So I called the next library on the list and I said, hey, Northampton is doing this awesome career workshop series and I'd love to bring it to your community as well. And that pitch changed everything because then everyone wanted in because someone else was doing it. And I was able to book 32 workshops that day. And that really launched my whole business because as soon as I got in front of people and I got to start talking about what I was doing, people started signing up for consulting.
That's crazy. when you go into the pitch mode and you're like, oh, I'm going to do one, and then you end up with 32, what were your immediate thoughts after that?
Oh, my God, I have to write 8 workshops because I didn't even know the names of them at that point. I was like, what is this going to be about? And, of course, I went to bed that night, woke up at midnight sweating, thinking, I need to write those right now. And I wrote, I think, 12 pages of content and then broke it all down and figured out what they would be about. And I only had about a week to do that. So I guess that's when you do your best work under pressure, you know, and you only have so much time to prove yourself.
Mm-hmm. What were in those 12 pages that you initially wrote out, and where did they come from? Because 12 pages is quite a lot just to come up with in like a night.
I know. I feel like this might sound crazy, but it was like I was channeling it. Like it really just I woke up in the middle of the night, had all these ideas, and I just couldn't stop writing. Like, I just had page after page after page. And I think I had all that information inside of me because I had so many jobs where I was hiring people and managing and doing marketing that I had this information just kind of in there, and it had to come out. And it was not in any organized fashion. After the 12 pages were written, I ended up going to my computer and organizing it all and making sense of it. But it was almost like the timing was perfect to just spew it out.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Were you nervous when you went to do your first one, and how did you prepare yourself mentally to give your first talk and all the talks that would come after that?
Oh, that is such a gut-wrenching question. I cried the whole way to my first workshop, and I was looking, you know, out the windshield thinking, I'm not going to go. I don't think I know what I'm doing. These people aren't going to trust me. They're not going to believe in me. And the reason I was saying those things was because I was 28, and at that age, at that time, everyone was telling me, you look like you're 20 or 19. And that kept like coming up in my mind, like, why would anyone hire me? I look like a little kid. And they're going to come to this workshop and wonder, like, who I think I am standing up there giving them advice, and just had all of this negative self-talk going on. And then I pulled into the parking lot of the library and I said, there's no way I'm going to build a business if I can't even do one workshop. And if I want to prove my boss wrong and let him know that my creativity is not an issue, and that was a huge motivator for me to prove him wrong, I have to go do this workshop. And this doesn't have to be perfect, but this has to be the start. Like, I have to start doing this. Otherwise, no one will find me, and this I'm going to have to go get another job. And I walked into the library, and no one was there. And I was like, oh, thank God, I don't have to do the workshop. And then, like, 10 people showed up. I was like, oh, no. And I just – my parents came, and my brother came. Those were the only workshops all three of them came to, is that first workshop. And that made me even more nervous. So I'm like, oh God, I have to prove to them too that I know what I'm doing. And it went fine. I mean, I was sweating like crazy. And when I get embarrassed, my face turns red. So my face was very red. My dad was taking pictures the whole time.
Like, of course.
I'm like, stop. You're making me embarrassed. And a woman who ended up becoming a friend came to that workshop, and she gave me some feedback after, like, a couple weeks later and helped me to build that. But it was terrifying, and I'm not going to pretend that, like, I just walked in there and I was like, oh, everything went great. I was sick to my stomach. I wanted to run away the whole time. I was pretty sure that I was going to fail in some way, like maybe pass out, or that, you know, no one would be interested. But after that workshop, a guy walked up to me and he said, I really like what you had to say about resumes. How much do you charge? I'd love to hire you. And I was shocked. I was like, and I hadn't even thought about how much I was going to charge yet. It really hadn't even crossed my mind because I was just so freaked out about getting the workshops done. And I was like, $75 an hour? He's like, oh, that sounds great. When do you want to start? I was like, oh, my God. let's start next week, I guess. I don't know. I have nothing going on, so let's do that. And then it just started happening. And in that first year, I did at least 500 free workshops. I just, like, once it started, I really jumped into it. And I went to Rotary Clubs, Chambers of Commerce. The colleges finally came around. I went to middle schools. I started volunteering at, unemployment groups and churches, and I started doing workshops there. I went to professional associations, women's groups, meetups. Everywhere that there were chairs, I was there, and I was giving a talk, pretty much. And that was the backbone of my whole business.
Did you prepare a lot for that first presentation?
Yeah, I did. I wrote the whole thing. So I had a script. This is like the worst idea, because I had a whole script in front of me. And when you're trying to talk to people and not read, but you have to read, you keep getting stuck and you're like, where am I in this script? That was a bad idea. I should have made bullet points. But what actually was cool about that was I wrote out all the workshops that way. And at the end of the 8-week series, there were, you know, four of them. Someone came up to me and said, hey, can you send me the notes and then a bunch of other people were like, yeah, send us the notes. And when I compiled the notes, they were 85 pages. And I said, I think this is like an ebook. I don't think I can just send the notes. So then I thought, I'll write an introduction to this. And then it became like 100 pages. And then I was like, I'll include some stories about people who were successful with this method over the last couple of months. And before I knew it, the book was 225 pages long. And that's what became the anti-resume revolution.
That's awesome. how did your speeches evolve from the very first one where you're reading off all these papers that you have and you're not finding your way to towards the end of where you're, by the end you had 200 plus speeches that you had given?
I mean, slowly but surely I started walking away from the notes. Like after delivering the same workshop three or four times, I felt like, okay, I kind of know what the middle or the beginning looks like, the middle looks like, and the end looks like. So if I just have like three or four bullet points written in front of me, I can just kind of refer to those. And then I started to get more comfortable with audience interaction. In the beginning, I like didn't even acknowledge that they were there. It was just about me and my notes. But as I started to get into it more, I was like, so does anyone have any questions about that? Or why don't you get into small groups and you can discuss it? And when I discovered the idea of small groups, I was like, I was a genius. I'm like, if they're talking to each other, I don't have to talk. This is amazing. And they loved it because they got to engage with each other. And that was a great way to start understanding the information I was sharing with them. And then we could have a discussion about it. And that made my workshops so much more dynamic and effective for them, and also easier for me because I didn't have to stand there like delivering the speech for an hour, because all the workshops were 60 minutes. And I think that made a difference too in terms of getting them excited about the work. And so over time, it just became a process of getting better at public speaking. And all good speakers will tell you the only way to become a great speaker is stage time. You just have to keep getting up there and doing it. And doing 500 in 1 year was a really great way to build that skill.
I bet.
Yeah.
I think the really important point that you made to yourself right before you walked into the library was, if I want to do this, I have to start somewhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's just, I think so many people wait for the moment when they're ready. They're like, well, I don't feel, it doesn't feel comfortable. It feels like it's too hard. I'm not ready to do this. And like the big secret is like, you'll never be ready. You just have to start. And that has been like at the core of pretty much everything I teach in my online community and to my clients. Because that's the big myth out there. It's like you have to keep taking more classes and learning more skills and building your plan. And it's like, no, just start. Just start doing it, and then you'll figure it out. And I think that's probably the most valuable lesson I got doing all of those speeches. It's like, yeah. And then I started to learn more about what I wanted to teach, what I got excited about, what my customers got excited about, and what they wanted to buy.
Yeah. The more you do something, the better you'll become. You can study and practice all you want, but until you've actually gone out and done the thing you intend to do, it's like never the same.
Definitely.
I want to talk about the imposter syndrome, which is, I don't know if I'm good enough, or I don't know whether I should be doing this. What are your thoughts on that, and how did you overcome those thoughts?
Well, those thoughts are still with me today, and I have never met someone who lives without those thoughts, no matter how successful they are. Even if they're running a 500 person company and they look like they're at the top of their game, they're still thinking, who do I think I am? I think that we're just sort of wired that way, to like try to keep ourselves safe and to not take risks. And every time we do, this little voice like that comes from our amygdala, of our old part of our brain, that wants to tell us to like go back to the comfy place. And it does that by trying to sabotage us, like by telling us things like, you're not good enough, you'll never succeed at this, you're not the kind of person who runs big companies or makes a lot of money. And what I've realized is that voice will always be there, and it's my choice to override it and say, hey, I really appreciate that you're trying to keep me safe, but I'm going to do this anyway. I'm not going to die. Everyone's going to be fine. And even if it doesn't go well, I'm going to learn from it and I'm going to do it differently next time. And I like almost have this conversation with myself out loud because it's really important for me to hear in my own voice that I'm not, that I am going to be okay, even if I don't know everything. And I think when I at one point learned about how, you know, we're all students at something, even experts, even gurus, even millionaires, everybody is a student. And they may know a lot about what they're doing in their business, but they still have a lot to learn somewhere else. And so in some ways, they're an imposter as well. Like, we're all imposters, you know, but we're all just trying to, like, figure it out and do the best job we can every day. And as long as we have the right intention of trying to help people and trying to do our best work, then that's the most we can hope for. And that's kind of where I approach my work from. And if it doesn't go well, I'm like, well, I tried the best I could, and I still feel good about it.
Mm-hmm. The one interesting thing is, no matter how much you've been doing something, somebody else will always be better than you at it.
Yeah. But if you ask them if they have imposter syndrome, a lot of times they do. And that's the shocking part. Like, what I find when I meet someone who's like super confident and outgoing and friendly and looks like they have it all together, if you're able to really have a one-on-one conversation with that person about what their life is like and what they think about themselves, they'll often tell you, like, oh, I'm scared all the time. Like, this is super hard work, and I'm not actually an outgoing person. I have to work really hard to do that, and I'm not talented in business. I've just studied a lot, and I'm always scared of failing, but I try things anyway. And it's, like, such a relief, because I'm like, oh, my God, I thought that you just knew all this stuff. And to find out that, like, the people who are really successful and confident and at the top of the game are just working really hard helps me to realize, like, well, if I can just keep working really hard, I can be successful and still feel like an imposter, and that's okay.
Yeah, I think the phrase fake it till you make it is kind of true in almost every aspect, because when you pursue that confidence and you're always acting like you already are there, people perceive that to be true. So even if you don't feel that inside, if you present it outwardly, then people will start to believe it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I noticed that with pricing, too. Like, if you decide to sell your services for a low rate, people will perceive that you don't know as much. But if you change your rate, like, from $200 to $1,000 for whatever you're selling, all of a sudden you know a lot more. And I think that's pretty interesting, too.
Yeah, I think the most important part of that is you have to provide the results.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that too, for sure.
When you were growing up, you had this creative urge in you. What did you go to study, and how did you end up as, like, an executive recruiter?
That's a good question. Well, I was really into film when I was a kid. I loved watching movies. I loved making videos with my next-door neighbors. We made music videos and fake news broadcasts, and we staged, like, a thing called Woodstock 94 in her backyard, and just, like, did a lot of interesting little projects with cameras. And when I went to college, I thought I should be a communications major because that will give me a lot of options, but I'll minor in film because I think maybe I'll have a future working in the movies. And my final semester, I went to UMass Amherst. My final semester, I did an internship in Washington, D.C., and I worked at a production company, and I got to edit videos and work with major companies. We did a big project for Sesame Street in Afghanistan, but we did it at the Blair House, which is the president's guest house, and, like, Big Bird was there with, like, the president of Afghanistan, and it was the weirdest day of my life. I'm like, what? Such a weird room right now. But I learned a lot about film and the video business and working. The owner of the company was a woman, and that was really my first time being around a woman in leadership and thinking, like, huh, I could own my own business. Interesting. And I really wanted to be a screenwriter. I loved writing, and I took some screenwriting classes while I was at UMass. And when I returned back to Western Mass after my internship, it occurred to me that I would probably have to move if I wanted to be a screenwriter, and I didn't really want to move. So my first job out of college was in radio. My favorite radio station when I was a teenager, it was like an alternative rock station. I harassed all the DJs constantly as a kid. As a kid, I was really lucky when I applied there that none of those people were still there. They'd be like, don't hire her. But I got a job as the promotions assistant, and I thought that would be a great job because I could come up with ideas for marketing and promotions and ways to interact with the fans. And it turned out that was a really good assumption on my part because I got to come up with contests, ways to give out prizes, like things that we could do at our sponsor locations. And after 6 months, I became the marketing director and then became the manager of all the interns and the event staff. And then I started working with the classic rock station. And the position grew over about 3.5 years. And I realized that my creativity was really useful in business because I had a different way of looking at problems that they'd been trying to solve for a long time. One of the things I was able to do was take our station vehicle, which was like an old Econoline van, and trade it in for an ambulance from our hospital in the area. And we took the paint off and we put this amazing paint job on the ambulance. It was called we called it the Laser Hellraiser because our radio station was called Laser. And it had like lightning bolts on it and light yellow blinking lights, and it was just like a spectacle. Like, you could not miss it. It was so cool when it was driving down the street, and it just really matched our demographic and the music we played. And that ended up getting featured in Billboard Radio Monitor in their 2006 edition, which was on excellence in marketing. And you know, I didn't think much of it at the time because I was like in a small market in Springfield, Massachusetts, and I didn't know a lot about the radio industry. And when I saw that picture, I was like, oh my God, I think I might be onto something here. I think I might be doing really cool work, but I didn't really know it because I'm just kind of here in this market. And I left there when Sirius came out and iPods and internet radio in the end of 2006. And I went to work in manufacturing doing HR and marketing. And then while I was there, I was looking for another job, and I went to the recruiting firm to ask them to help me. And they were like, well, we don't have any jobs available right now, but have you ever thought about being a recruiter? And I was like, no, but that sounds interesting. That's how I ended up there.
Wow.
Yeah.
What were your ideas when you accepted the job to become a recruiter?
Well, when they said you get to run your own business within a business, and my primary goal would be talking to people in HR and CEOs of small companies and recruiting high-level employees, I thought, well, this could be a really cool way to get better at sales and to create my own goals and challenge myself independently to reach those goals, because I had never worked by myself before. I always was part of a team and worked with all the other members. And that was intriguing to me because I thought I can really like use my own creative approaches and see if I really am a creative person like I think I am. But I never got to do that because I had to read scripts and stuff.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it was.
when you're going in with one expectation but not meeting those expectations, I think, is worse than having no expectations.
Yeah. Yeah, I really was doubting myself at that time, too. I was like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do this job? I've never been this bad at a job. And I realized, like, you can't, you know, put a square peg in a round hole. That's kind of what I was doing there. And at one point, my boss said to me, you know, I'm really disappointed in you. And I was like, wow. I've never had a boss tell me they were disappointed in me. They've always been really happy with my performance. And it was such a, like, mess with my mind kind of job because I just didn't realize, like, I'm not meant to do robotic work, I guess. And that's when I learned that.
Yeah, it's a very good thing to know when you don't want to do something, because then you can quit and not regret it.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about your upcoming or your newly released, is that right?
Yeah.
Your newly released book, Who's With Us. What was the idea behind that book?
Well, I found it to be really upsetting when I would get a phone call from a potential client who would say, like in tears sometimes, like, I am really struggling with this question about leaving my job and starting a business. I know that I don't want to be here. I know that my boss isn't supportive and that I don't get to fully explore what I'm good at. But the idea of starting a business is terrifying and I don't know what to do. And like sometimes these people could not afford coaching and I would get off the phone and be like, oh man, that's so like upsetting because they're in this position where they don't know where to turn and I don't have a resource to give them because there is no book written on how to determine whether or not you should start a business. There's like, what color is your parachute? How to start a business? Like how to talk to your customers? How to launch an idea? But there's no book that addresses that one question of whether or not you should start a business. And when I recognized that and it became clear that I had all the tools that these people who were aspiring entrepreneurs really needed, I think it was like my responsibility to write that book. And so over the course of the last year and a half, I put together 10 self-assessments that I have used with clients in the past that I built through kind of trial and error and recognizing what was most useful to them and what wasn't. And then I interviewed 30 business owners from around the world and asked them about their transition from corporate life to starting their own business and what mistakes they made, what advice they would give newbies, what that transition was like personally. And then I included those stories in the book. So as you go through it, you're taking all of these assessments and you're keeping track of them all in this like personal escape plan you can download from my website. And then you're reading stories of other people who did it. And it's inspiring and it's also eye-opening because it asks you to dig deep and recognize the kind of person you really truly are and what kind of lifestyle you want to create, what kind of sacrifices you're willing to make, and where you want to be. And I think sometimes aspiring entrepreneurs become so enamored with their idea that they forget to think about how that's going to impact their life, the people around them, and their future. And that's what this book addresses.
Hmm. What were some of the more surprising things that you learned by talking to those business owners?
Well, everybody was terrified. I mean, I expected to hear that, but to the degree that these people felt like they were putting their family in jeopardy, that they were crazy for wanting to go out on their own when they had a job with a steady paycheck, and that they just felt like this was their calling and they had to do it. And that was consistent among every single person. And at the end of the interview, I asked everybody, would you do it again? And every single person said yes. And you know, there were a couple people, like one person in particular, Lori Cheeked. She's in New York City and she started an online dating app, which it's really interesting because it kind of takes online dating into the real world. You get these little cards that you can hand out to people if you see someone out like at a bar, and it's like a business card, but it has like your code on it. So if you're walking around and you see someone who catches your eye, you can give them your card with the website and the number and they can go check you out online. And if they like you, they can send you a message. So she's talking about starting this business and why she did it and how scary it was and the fact that she had no technical background, but she was launching a whole online site for dating in a totally different way than had ever been done before. And she just kept waking up every morning saying, you got to keep doing this. You got to keep figuring it out. It's time for you to build something and really show the world that you've got something here. And I just really loved her story because that's exactly what it is. Like, you have to be self-propelled. You have to keep pushing through those hard parts where you feel like you don't know what to do next. And I think that's the story that aspiring entrepreneurs really need to hear and to know that while you may have an awesome support system around you, you have to be your biggest cheerleader and you have to be dedicated to pushing through every day. And that's, you know, we talk about doing what you love and like, that's awesome. I totally agree with that. But also know that doing what you love can be really hard.
Mm-hmm. What questions should people ask themselves if they're thinking about starting a business?
Well, I think they need to think really hard about their lifestyle, like what kind of lifestyle they want. Because for the first like 5 years of running a business, you may not be able to have big lavish vacations and the newest version of the car you love and the best cable package and the newest cell phone. Like a lot of those things might have to be pushed aside so that you can keep investing in your business. And like if you have kids, creating a college fund and thinking about where that money is going to come from. And I think a lot of it's a little bit more on the practical side of just how does not having a paycheck impact your life and your family? And what do you want to create down the line if you are successful? Do you want to move to an island and just be able to like live off coconuts and making fires? Or do you want to buy a mansion and have like tons of money to take care of your family? And how will that happen? And what kind of business are you creating to do that? And what does the business plan look like? And just kind of envisioning what could become of the effort and the new model of business. So lifestyle, I think, is a big part of it. And there's a whole exercise in the book that takes you through your personal values, your definition of success, and the lifestyle you want to create. And by the end of the chapter, you've designed a whole lifestyle that, you know, may or may not be aligned with business ownership. Another one is about your passion. This is probably the most popular question I'm asked, is like, how do I determine what I'm passionate about? And I've created a method of doing that, which you can go through in the book, and I can share here if you'd like, that is totally different from what a lot of, you know, weekend retreats or like meditations will tell you about how to figure out what you're passionate about. And I think it's a really important place to start, because I think we talk about like a mission we have. Like a friend of mine said, I'm really passionate about making people feel better about themselves. And I want to do that by launching a website that sells like products that make them feel good. And I was like, that's great. So your day will be full of like website updates, you know, which is totally fine if you want to run a website. But if you want to like talk to people all the time, I don't know if you want to have a website. And so it's like really thinking about the practical day-to-day stuff. And while you may have this big end goal of like making people happy, you have to think about what it's going to be like to get there and what you're going to spend your time doing.
What are your answers to these questions? I'm going to put those out there because you just mentioned them. The lifestyle you want to have, the passions that you have in your business, the future, and the end goal.
The lifestyle I want to have is to have a very simple home, where I just like feel comfortable and have, you know, just the basic things like a nice kitchen and a nice place to sleep. And I want to be able to travel and have a house in the woods where I can go and like not talk to anybody. I'm a pretty serious introvert. So to be able to go and like hang out in the woods, but then be able to see the world and spend maybe 4 hours a day on my business. I really want to continue creating things and making things that bring value to my customers and to the people who really want to build a meaningful business. But I also want to have time to write my own things for me and to paint and to like maybe build a table and just kind of like create things on my own time. What I'm really passionate about is thinking about something that gets me excited. Like, let's see, cooking. I love to cook and I don't want to be a chef, but I love to cook. And what I recognize that I love about cooking is just the process of putting together a whole bunch of things, having this idea, and then seeing how they come out. Like, that's what I love about cooking. It's not even really like what it tastes like at the end or eating. It's just like, oh my God, I'm putting all these beautiful colors together and I'm chopping them and I'm cooking them at different temperatures and I'm timing them. And it's like this big challenge to myself. Like, can I make it all turn out and like come out at the same time and, you know, look good and taste good and all those things. So I think what I'm passionate about is just like making cool things and expressing my creativity through those things. And my business allows me to do that. And the last question was my definition of success, or
The end goal. I guess you kind of talked about that a little bit.
I think the end goal is to show people that you can bring your creativity and your ideas and the things that make you you to your business, and you can still be successful. And this is like a topic that I've been talking about a lot lately because I think I've become more comfortable with myself, so I feel like I can say it. Is that you don't have to pretend to be somebody else in order to like run a business that people care about. And I see it all the time that people like act like, you know, they've got it all together and that they're an expert and they've got their business suit and they've got their signature talks and they've got their perfect business card. But I think what the customers really want, what the world really wants, is just to see them and just to see like a real person who has a passion for what they're doing, and they don't have to look a certain way or talk a certain way. And the more people I meet who are just like authentically doing their thing, even if they're in a t-shirt and shorts and they're like, yeah, this is the thing I built, I just like fall in love with them because they're just doing their thing unapologetically in their own skin and just like putting it out there. And I think it's so refreshing to meet people that way and to also support people in becoming that. Because I think that's what we all really want, is to just like be able to put our stuff out there and wear the clothes that make us happy and talk about it in a way that really like jives with our energy and not have to put this coat of paint on it that doesn't even resemble who we are. And so I think that's my end goal, is to really get more people feeling like, hey, I'm just going to be my weird self all the time. And if people don't like it, that's okay. But maybe a lot of people will like it, and that's how I'm going to, you know, make my business and help others. Because I think a lot of people like kind of spend a lot of time being scared and afraid to show what they really want to say and what they really want to do. And that's a major problem. It like makes me really scared to know that so many people are so scared. And I think I just want to inspire more people to just like let it all hang out there.
That's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah, when you see people be themselves, you're much more likely to trust them, first of all. And you might not attract everyone because no one can, but you will attract the people who you want to attract, which is the thing that you should be doing.
Yeah. I don't think it's about like quality, you know, or quantity. It's not like I need 50,000 followers. Like, what if you had 500 fans who just totally loved you? Would that be enough, you know? And so to think about just what you're putting out there and what you want to say and who you want to connect with and how you want to help them and just kind of keeping it simple is totally acceptable.
Yeah. I think Kevin Kelly's 1,000 True Fans is probably something every creative person should read.
Yeah. Totally.
Because in it, he talks about you don't need 100,000 people to make a living. You just need 1,000 people who are really passionate about everything you do, and they can support you, and you'll have people on the fringes that will buy here and there. But if you find those 1,000 people that really like what you're doing, then you can sustain yourself for however long you want to do it.
Yeah, definitely. I love that.
Also, I like the thing that you said there about the cooking and the process versus the end result, because oftentimes what you find is when you're going through it, you're like, eh. But when you reach your goal, you're like, oh, it's not as good as I thought it might be. And you realize that when you're going through the process, you're actually enjoying it more than the end outcome.
Yeah, exactly. And that's actually the philosophy behind something I've been working on lately, which is this thing called the creator cycle. And it's a way of thinking about your work that removes the result and the outcome as the main goal. Instead, the goal is experimentation. And so there's four steps of the creator cycle. It goes from being to dreaming to doing to making. And the idea is to make it through the whole entire cycle so that you can gather information about yourself. And what I see all the time is people get into the being and the dreaming, which is also like the planning stage, and they come up with all these ideas and they're like, oh, that would be so fun. Oh my God, I'm going to write this book. And then it comes to the doing stage where they have to actually start like putting together sections and figuring out chapters. And they're like, oh, that would never work. I'm not going to write this book. No one wants to read this. I'm not a writer. It's going to suck. Who's going to buy this? And then they just quit. But that's where all the information comes from, when they actually push through that fear and they just write the sections of the chapter anyway. And then they sit down every day or every other day and they write the book and they fight themselves and, you know, sitting down at their laptop and they're saying to themselves, I have nothing to say. I don't even know why I'm writing this book. This is so stupid. And then they finally do, and they get through the making stage and they get the opportunity to reflect on the situation and realize, like, oh my God, I'm a really good writer. Or realize that was the hardest thing I've ever done, but I have a book. And if I can write a book, maybe I can do something else really, really meaningful. And they start to gather all this information and see from what part of it was scary. Why was it scary? What part of it was stopping you? What was making you scared? Or what part of it was really exciting? Why did you like writing? Or why did you like putting this together? What was motivating you? And you can gather so much information about yourself and about the things that get you most excited in life just by pushing through the hard parts. And so once you go through one creator cycle, you now have like a whole foundation of information. And then you go through another one and you can like layer it, and you've got layers and layers of information about yourself that you can then use to create a new business, come up with new hobbies, find new ways to sell to your customers, all kinds of things. And it only comes from pushing through the hard parts and not paying attention to what's going to happen at the end, but just getting through it and paying attention to what's happening while you do it. And it's so fascinating. Like, I think I became a different person this year just by creating this creator cycle and paying attention to every step of it.
Very cool. Is that something that you're doing as like a workshop, or is that part of the book?
It's not part of the book, but it's part of my online community. So I just taught a class on it last month, and now I'm using it in every class I teach as like the backbone of how to get things done. So right now I'm teaching a class in November on generosity and how giving can help build your business. And I'm going to teach them to build giving into their business through using the creator cycle. And 2 weeks ago I gave another TEDx talk, and the creator cycle is kind of at the heart of it.
That's awesome. I think the important parts of the creator cycle are definitely the creation, but being consistent about creating. So it's not, I have to work 5 hours today to do this thing. It's how much time can I allot every day so that I'm consistent about it and I'm not worrying about having to create, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Putting it into your schedule is so important. Like, people say that, you know, they don't go to the gym unless they put it on their schedule. I think it's the same exact thing for creating, because you can always come up with something else to do, because creating can be so difficult, just like going to the gym. But if you schedule that time each day and you're like, okay, at 6 o'clock tonight, I'm going to spend 1 hour working on this thing, you can kind of get yourself psyched up for it. And I also think creating parameters for creation is important, because you're almost making like a container. Like, there's a beginning and an end point, and you're going to go into the zone and then you're going to come out of it. And it can be so scary to allow yourself to go into that creating kind of energy, that if you don't set an end time, you know, people can be afraid that, what if it doesn't go well? What if it sucks? And what if I don't have any ideas? And what if I waste all my time? Well, you only have 1 hour, so get to work.
Stop thinking.
Yeah, stop thinking about it and just do it. So I'm a big fan of timers.
Oh, yeah. I think the other part of that is the experimentation phase, where you're just trying things out, where you don't know whether or not it will be good or bad, but you won't know until you try.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so right. And I think people get really caught up in doing it right and being perfect. And when you're brand new at something, it shouldn't be about doing it right. It should just be about doing it. Like, just do it and then figure it out and think about what went right and what went wrong. For sure.
Yeah. Nike probably got it right when they came up with their slogan. Let's make it very simple for people.
Yeah, they were so smart. Like, oh, man, every day I'm like, just do it. Oh, man, Nike is so good.
How did you start up the community, and what was the impetus of that?
Well, that started as a huge experiment. When I was when I left UMass, so I started the business, the career consulting business, in 2009. That was a huge experiment, because I didn't really know what I was doing or what I was building, and I had no vision for it. So trying to build opportunities, every time someone would call and say, hey, can you help with this fundraiser? I'd say, sure. Hey, can you help us, you know, run this event? Okay. Well, can you join this volunteer opportunity? Okay. Like, I was doing so many things and going in so many different directions that I could never catch my breath, and I felt like I was drowning every day. And one day at the end of 2010, UMass called me and said, oh, we need some help temporarily, part-time, with our career center and the Alumni Association. Can you help us with this? And I was like, oh, my God, a savior. I can, like, come out from all these things I'm doing and just, like, commit myself to one thing and spend some time on pause with my business and figure out where that is going, because I have no idea. Fast forward 2.5 years of working at UMass, it became a full-time position, and I helped them build this career program, which I loved. And in the back of my mind, I kept thinking, okay, I need to get back to my business. I need to figure out what I'm building. And nothing moved. Like, I had no ideas. Nothing new came up. I wasn't in contact with any of the people I had started talking to when I was running my business. And I felt like, oh my God, I have to get back to that somehow. I just don't know what to do. And then a friend of mine contacted me who had a small business, and he asked me if I wanted to do sales and marketing for him to help, you know, for a bit in growing his business. So I left UMass and I started helping him. And after about 6 months of that, a new consulting firm opened in my area, and they asked me if I wanted to join and become a career and business coach with them. And I was like, yeah, sure. I go join their company, and then I'm like, what am I doing? I'm right back where I started with my career consulting business, running around in circles, like hustling every single day, doing all these different things to try to build my company, and I still feel like I'm not building anything. And so I left that consulting firm in early 2014, and I was really confused, and I was really bummed out, and I felt like, why is it that I can help all these other people who have come to me over the years to build their business or to figure out what they want to do with their career, but I feel so stuck, and like, I can't answer this question of like what it is I'm trying to build. And so I ended up having like a final meeting with my last client from that consulting firm. And as I got in the car, I expected to be like, feel relieved and feel elated, like, okay, that's over. Now I can figure out my next thing. And when I got in the car, I had this pounding headache, and I was like, oh my God, I never get headaches. What is this? I'm going to go home and take a nap. I laid down, and I ended up staying there for a month. I was so tired, and like, just my body was like, we're not doing this anymore. Like, we're done with whatever this thing is that you're trying to build or whatever your plan is, because you're running yourself into the ground and it's going nowhere. So it's time to chill. And I didn't go anywhere. I didn't talk to anybody. I didn't do anything. I just slept for a month. And at the end of the month, I didn't have any ideas as to what to do next. And it was March of last year. And I said, well, I don't have anywhere to go, so I guess I'll take more time off. And so I decided to take the next 3 months off and just like live off credit cards. And what happened was I had a ton of time on my hands for the first time in my whole life. Like, I had always been in school, working part-time, working like 2 or 3 jobs at once, volunteering, taking classes, and I just never had time to do nothing. And so that's what I did. I did nothing. I like went for bike rides, like took selfies with my cat, like, you know, like hung out in the woods and like stared at birds. I just like sat there, and I didn't let myself do anything. And then one day I was sitting in my home office, and I looked at my windows, and I was like, I don't have curtains in here. Like, why didn't I ever put curtains in my office? And then I had this memory of when I was a kid and how I loved to make clothes. And I stopped doing that. And I was like, I bet I could make curtains for my office. So I just like went to a thrift store and I bought a bunch of fabric. I came home and I made curtains. And while I was making those curtains, I had this other memory of doing a lot of arts and crafts when I was a kid. And I was like, why did I stop doing arts and crafts? I'm going to do an arts and crafts project when I'm done with these curtains. So I did an arts and crafts project. And then while I was doing that, I had another memory of making greeting cards for my friends when I was a kid. And I was like, oh my God, there's something crazy going on here. I totally forgot that I'm an artist. And it was like the first time I had realized that in 12 years that I was an artist. Like, I always like thought of myself as creative and that I could apply that stuff to business, but I didn't make the connection that I was an artist. And I think when I graduated from college, I like subconsciously decided that I had to either be a business person or an artist, not a business person and an artist. And so I stopped making things. And when I let myself do that last summer, I realized, like, I need to make things. This is what feeds my soul. This is what makes me really happy. And this is when I feel the most alive. So I can't just be a consultant. I have to be able to make things. And so I thought back to all the meetings I had with my clients and that how a lot of them said, like, we want the opportunity to continue learning from you even when we're not coaching. And some of them said, like the business owners specifically said, I don't have time to like leave my desk in the middle of the day to go to a workshop, and I can't take like 50,000 different webinars with 50,000 different people on the internet. I want to just like learn from someone I trust. And some other people said, I feel really isolated at home. I wish I was part of a community of other people doing something similar to me. And so I took all of this feedback and I decided that I was going to build this online community and school for business owners to continue learning from me or start learning from me on their own time in a way that worked for them. And I spent like the whole summer of last year building that. And I called it the Do and Make Business District because I really wanted to inspire people to do the work that they were most excited about and make an impact in the world. And not just talk about it and not just like get excited about it and do nothing, but actually like make it happen. And so that's been really the philosophy behind the whole thing from day one is like, we're going to do it anyway, even when it's hard, even when it sucks, even when we're tired, even when we don't want to, we're going to do the work anyway. And that's when we're going to learn and that's when we're going to make an impact. And so I've been teaching all these classes ever since. And when I launched it in October of 2014, I did like a private launch to my newsletter list. And I said, I don't know what this is going to be exactly, but I know I'm going to teach classes every month. I know you're going to get to talk to people who are doing work like you are, and I'm not going to let you quit. And if you want to join me, it's $25 a month, and we'll figure it out. And 25 people signed up. And it was so exciting because I was like, oh, my God, I'm accountable to these 25 people now. I have to build something every month. And I started making these classes. They're all videos. I started to get really creative with them. Like one of the first ones I shot at a playground, and in the video I'm like going down the slide and I'm on the swings and I'm talking about your lifestyle design, similar to the chapter in my book about helping people figure out like what they want to build in their life alongside their business. And I was really scared to put that class out because I'm like, what kind of a business coach hangs out at a playground like going down the slide? Like they're not gonna like this. And then I asked them, like, what did you think? And so many of them were like, oh, my God, it was so fun to see you having fun. And it was really cool to learn about business in a way that didn't feel like it was business. It just felt like a fun video that got you thinking about things you never think about. And I was like, oh, my God, I can do weird things and no one cares. And that was really the beginning of recognizing that I could bring my weird creative self to my business, and people really responded to it. And so then classes to come featured me in costumes, playing different characters, just trying to make learning more fun and engaging and bringing my own creativity to every video. And it's been a ton of fun, and it has been the biggest experiment of my life. And actually starting like next week, I'm going to be redoing the whole site. And based on all the feedback I've collected over the last year from the members, which is now at about 50 members, to add more features, get rid of the things that aren't working, and continue to help them grow, and also allow me to make more things, which makes me really happy.
Well, that's really, really awesome. it's you were able to take, like, you go back to your childhood and remember all the things that, like, lit you up inside instead of all the things that you thought you should be doing, you went back and rediscovered what you love to do and brought that to people. And by being yourself, you're able to let other people show that they don't really care. They love when people are themselves.
Yeah, it's really amazing. All those like times when I said, oh, my 13-year-old self loved to make clothes. And then I'm like, that wasn't my 13-year-old self. That was me. Like, that was just who I am. And it was such a revelation to recognize that just because you're a kid doing something doesn't mean that it's a kid thing. It's like something you can do for your whole entire life, but you abandoned it at some point because you thought you weren't allowed to do it anymore. That's a really freeing moment.
Yeah. I think everyone is weird inside, and we don't like to admit it, but everyone's got their quirks. And when you show that to people, they get to see somebody else be open, and they themselves open up too.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we're all weird. We need to just let the weirdness out, because then we can just chill, you know, because we're all trying so hard to be normal. It's like so much work.
Yeah, no one is normal. Everyone's got something.
Yeah, which is what's so cool, you know. I love meeting people with like interesting quirks and like all kinds of random thoughts, like, oh, I'm so glad I met you.
Yeah, it's definitely liberating when you get to meet people, I guess, that are part of your tribe, and they're doing similar things to you, or they like what you're doing, and you're making an impact.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I have a few more questions left. What quote really speaks to you as a person, or describes the way that you view life?
Well, it's a Louis C.K. quote. It's kind of long, but it's awesome. He says, quote, "I'm bored is a useless thing to say. I mean, you live in a great, big, vast world that you've seen none percent of. Even the inside of your own mind is endless. It goes on forever, inwardly. Do you understand? The fact that you're alive is amazing. So you don't get to say, I'm bored." I think that's great.
Yeah. And I think we all try to spend time making ourselves busy, and by doing that, we're not actually able to explore things like people used to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you can, like, I know this sounds like the opposite of curiosity, but if you can set aside time to be curious, like on Saturday every morning from 8 to noon, I'm just going to like allow myself to go explore something and be curious. That would just be like the coolest part probably of everyone's week, because it's just free form and you get to be a kid again and just explore and not, you know, fill your whole morning with like cleaning the litter box and raking the backyard, but you're actually like just going out and just letting your mind be free. I think that's so valuable.
Yeah, I think we can learn a lot from kids and how they approach the world. At some point, we lose that.
Yeah, I think so too. And I saw the "Get Busy Living" or "Get Busy Dying" quote on your website, and I love that one too.
Yeah, it's. I think we can all try to do that, but most of the time we just forget.
Yeah.
Do you have a morning routine? And if you do, what is it?
I do have a morning routine, and it involves doing the least amount of thinking possible. So I get up every morning at 6 o'clock, I feed the cats, and I immediately go to the gym, because if I think about it, I won't go, because I'll come up with about 80 reasons why I can't go to the gym that day. Even if it's like a degree colder than I'm comfortable with outside, oh, I can't go to the gym. So I don't think about it. I have a routine. I get up, I feed my cats, and then I go to the gym. And I don't think about what I'm going to do at the gym before I get there. I just go. Because if I think about it, I'm like, well, I don't really want to lift weights today. I don't really want to do yoga. And I'll just get myself all worked up, and then it'll be like, I can't go. So I don't allow myself to have thoughts about the gym. I just go. And then when I get there, I decide, like, what do I feel like doing? And sometimes it's a mix of rowing the bike and walking. Sometimes it's weights. Sometimes it's yoga. It just all depends. And then I come home and I make breakfast, and I always eat the same thing. I always have eggs, avocado, and brown rice, because I don't want to think. I just want to do it. And then I have coffee and I read my email, and then I start my day at 9 a.m. And usually right before I have coffee, I like get dressed and take a shower and stuff. But then I start at 9 and I just start working. And it's a great way to build momentum, because I find that if I try to just get up and like take a shower and work, I'm not ready. It's like there's nothing is in motion yet. But by going to the gym and having breakfast and getting dressed and making coffee and starting with my email, I've got a really good launch pad for the day, because I'm already thinking and moving. So I do every day that way.
Sweet. Yeah. One thing that I've picked up recently is a lot of people who are able to do a lot of things try to make as few decisions as possible. They just build a routine so that they force themselves to do things, or they pick out clothes that they don't have to think about.
Yeah, I'm still working on that one. I like picking out my outfit, so it's like I can't do the Steve Jobs black turtleneck thing. I'm not there yet, but as far as the breakfast and the gym, I'm on it.
Yeah, it's all about picking the things that you know that you don't want to think about.
Yeah, exactly. And that can be fun to like get to know yourself and which things aren't important and which ones are.
For sure. Do you have any recommendations for books or podcasts or documentaries that you could tell the audience?
There is a documentary on Netflix called Chef's Table, and I could watch that all day. It's actually a series of like hour-long documentaries, and one documentary features a chef like from somewhere in the world. And some of them are Michelin-rated chefs. Others are just like super creative, interesting chefs. But the way that that show is shot and the way they tell the story of the chef like leaves me in tears every time, because I'm so inspired by them following their dream and taking a new approach to the culinary world and doing things that all the critics and other chefs tell them is wrong, and ends up to be this amazing new invention in that space. And I think it's the most inspiring thing I've seen in a year. I highly recommend it, Chef's Table. As far as podcasts, besides this one, I think the Unmistakable Creative podcast is amazing. I love that Srini allows people to talk and tell their story and really get into why they decided to do things and where their creativity comes from and the background story. I love the book What It Is by Linda Barry. She's a comic book artist, and this book is a graphic novel, which every time I say that, I immediately think maybe people think I'm talking about porn, but it's not. it's a illustrated novel. and it's every page is a collage, and on each page she asks a different question, like what is an object? And what are words, and what is writing? And it makes you think about all these like foundational things that we talk about every single day that maybe we haven't really thought that much about. And it's really fun to just imagine the answers to those questions and to see her creativity laid out on each page and how much she pours her heart into her writing and how she arrives at these questions. The whole book is just like so inspiring. And it's like when you're reading it, it's like you're sitting there with her learning about her life and being asked really interesting questions.
Those are some very cool recommendations.
Oh, thanks.
Who is somebody that you know personally that is super creative, and then somebody that you don't know personally that is also creative?
Someone I know is a man by the name of Tom Fox, who's a good friend of mine. He's, it seems like every week he changes his title, but he owns a business and he helps other businesses grow. And sometimes he does it by helping them get clear on who their customer is. Sometimes he does it by just trying to understand where the real problems lie in their organization. But the thing that makes him really creative is he comes from an awful background. He was in gangs and he's been arrested many times. He has, you know, stolen. He's attacked people, he's dealt drugs, he's stolen cars. He had a really hard upbringing in Queens, and he's reinvented his whole life, and he's decided that he has a lot of power and he's a really smart person, and instead of using that power for evil, he's going to use it for good. And he does a lot of volunteering, and he's gotten creative with his skill set and started to apply it to making businesses and organizations and schools more successful. And he has struggled throughout his life to, you know, bury those demons and become a better person and just really be an active member of the community with a voice and speaking up for the things he believes in. And I just have so much admiration for him, because he every day could choose to go back to that life, and he always chooses the high road, and he's creative in how he approaches the problems he's solving. And I don't think he considers himself a creative person. Actually, I know he doesn't. He'd probably freak out if he heard me saying this. But but I see so much creativity in him, and it inspires me all the time to solve problems differently in my life and to not take the easy road or just do the thing that, you know, creates an easy answer, but to really think deeply about it and to do the right thing. And he always inspires me in that way with his creativity.
Cool.
And the person I don't know is Howard Stern.
Interesting.
Yeah, I am a huge Howard Stern fan. I really admired the fact that he was so strong earlier in his career and stood up to his bosses because he had such a strong vision for his radio show, even when people were not really doing talk radio and they didn't think that that format made sense and that they thought people just wanted to listen to music. And when he started incorporating bits and, you know, bringing in different guests, and they talked about personal subjects and they talked about things that people were really interested in hearing about, I just really admired the fact that he was willing to go out on a limb for his creative vision. And I know a lot of people don't agree with what he says and they think that he's a shock jock or whatever, but I really feel like, you know, even if you're upsetting people because they don't agree with you, at least you're doing your thing. You're not just selling out and going to work every day and being upset because you can't say the things you want to say. And you're just doing the job people are telling you to do. Like, you have to respect someone who's willing to get fired because they believe so deeply in the vision they have. And I've always just felt I've gained a tremendous amount of power and strength to take risks in my own business because I see someone like Howard who's maybe not always right and maybe doesn't always say the right thing, but he's always done what he felt is like clear, closest to who he is and the kind of radio he wants to create.
Very cool. My last question is, what is your definition of creativity and what can people do to be more creative?
My definition is seeing things through your own lens and being okay with what you see. And I think that is a huge lifelong commitment to be able to see things in your own way and then accepting that and not telling yourself, well, that's not how it should be and no one else sees it that way and I must be wrong, but to actually just like trust in yourself. And I think what people can do to be more creative is that we have to trust what we make and not let judgment or feedback be the determining factor of whether or not it's good. And once we trust our creativity, more of it shows up for us.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Thanks.
I love hearing everyone's explanations, and it's always, someone's always got a different twist on that answer.
Oh, cool.
Well, Angela, it's been really cool talking to you. I think people are really going to enjoy this one. Where can people keep up to date with what you're doing or find you online?
Well, my online community is at domakebusiness.com. I'm on Twitter at Angela Lucier and Instagram. I'm also on Facebook, Angela Lucier 100.
Cool. Well, yeah, it's definitely been awesome talking to you. And if you want to plug your books, go ahead and talk about whatever you want.
Oh, thanks. Well, The Anti-Resume Revolution and Who's With Us are both available on Amazon. And I have a third book coming out in January 2016, which is part two of Who's With Us. And it's called Do and Make, the Handbook for Starting Your Very Own Business. So once you finish Who's With Us, if you decide, yes, I'm ready to start my own business, then the second book will show you how. And that will be on Amazon in January.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on. It's been awesome talking to you.
You too. Thanks so much.
All right, bye.
Bye.
And that's it for the 47th episode of Cracking Creativity. For show notes, go to crackingcreativity.org/47. If you like this episode, subscribe to the show on iTunes at crackingcreativity.org/subscribe. Also, feel free to write a review or leave me a comment about the show. Hope this stoked your career fires, and I'll see you next time on Cracking Creativity.